Okay, when we took this up last, we sent out Jack and Senator Shoemaker and Representative Mannix to work on cleaning up the technical problems and things that had been that the committee noted. So, Jack, why don't we just kind of go through this and see where you are with it, and see how, and maybe whether it's who, I don't know who, whether it's Jack or Bob, or who's going to lead us through. Okay, Jack, why don't you go ahead. And Senator Brenneman will be here momentarily. He's in a 2-minute conference, I think, on a fish bill.
Right.
If not, we can go get him. Okay. As a matter of fact, do we have anybody here who could, in fact? He's in 347, and we might get him.
Okay.
Yeah, ask her to go get him just to, he can. Anyway, let's go ahead.
All right, we're working through from the B-19 draft. I'll stick my comments primarily to the changes that have been proposed, but when it's necessary, I'll try to remind the committee exactly what the section is that we're addressing. Section 1 is a definitional section. The primary change that we've made here is the deletion. It might, see the chair's already got it. It might be useful for the members to have the old bill next to the new draft too, so they can see what's been deleted in places. The main change we made here is we've deleted misdemeanors involving violence, and we've deleted, that's the main change. We initially discussed trying to define misdemeanors involving violence, and our discussion evolved to the point that we thought it was appropriate to delete them all together, sticking with the traditional distinction for gun control laws between felonies and misdemeanors. Misdemeanors involving violence, as defined in the bill, is somewhat unusual, as the committee noted the other night, in that it includes violence against property. That was the change we made. Section 2, there were no major changes, or any changes for that matter, as I recall. Section 3, which is first of all, on page 4 of the new draft that we're working with, you'll see a new subsection 4, and that's the civil immunity section amendment that the city requested. We move on to section 3, which in the new draft begins on page 14. This is the provision that imposes penalties for selling firearms to persons that are under disability. There was a concern raised that although it says the law applies to persons who intentionally sell, we're on page 9 of the old bill and 14 of the new draft, that it wasn't clear that there was a quote requirement for a successful conviction that the seller actually know that the person was under a disability. So you'll see new language on lines 5 and 6 on page 15 of the draft that says when the transferor knows or reasonably should know that the recipient, and then we get into the categories of people that have disabilities. And that's simply that jives with the stated intent and makes it clear that the seller must know that the person is under a disability. The next change that we made is within this section, One of the disabilities is that a person cannot buy a firearm, or a firearm cannot be sold to a person if there was an outstanding warrant. That was in the B engrossed version. We inserted the requirement that it be a felony warrant. We thought that was appropriate. We also inserted a requirement that the person be on felony pretrial release instead of any pretrial release. You'll see later when we get into the possession statutes that we, with respect to warrants being outstanding and pretrial release, we've abolished that altogether. But here, because there is no constitutional right to sell firearms, we thought it was appropriate to leave those in there, although we modified them. Down on line 13 of the draft, we changed the disability for persons involuntarily committed to make it last 4 years instead of six, and this is so it would jive with the disabilities for the other, or the length of time of disabilities of the other minor transgressions. We also deleted, as a disability, crimes regarding controlled substances or the use of alcohol. That seemed to be the committee's consensus at the time. I would note that most crimes involving controlled substances, especially the controlled substances that are seen in 99% of the court cases, are already felonies. So those would still be covered. It would still be illegal to sell to those folks because they've committed felonies. You'll see down on line 21 a change in language again. No person shall sell any firearm. I think the old language is something like reasonably believes that it's stolen. We changed it to be consistent and to provide a clearer standard. No person shall sell any firearm that the person knows or reasonably should know is stolen. On line 24, we've changed the language to transferring. The old language was, I believe, gives. Transferring is more consistent, and it covers covers more situations.
Pick up line 18, Jerry.
Yes, we've added the language at line 18, and that's when the person is listed in the Health Division Registry, we've made it an illegal act to sell to that person. Before Section 5, you'll recall...
15, excuse me, I'm going
to... Please.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're
page 15?
We're page 15 on the draft.
And page 10 on the old bill.
On the draft.
Thank you.
So we've tied in the Health Division Registry. And you'll see when we get to that, to Section 5 as well, that listing on the registry is only for a year now. We thought it was in keeping with the intent of the bill that be sort of an emergency measure intended to address acute situations. So we reduced the time that you're on that list from 6 to 1 year, and we've given sellers a reason not to sell to those persons. Now, there's going to be an amendment offered to abolish Section 5 altogether, and that, of course, we can discuss at the appropriate time. Down on line 28, you'll see that this is now a Class A misdemeanor. It had been a Class C felony. We felt that it was more consistent. Pardon me?
Do you have an extra copy? The draft that we're looking at?
Yes.
Just go ahead through.
There's a whole bunch of them right here.
Go ahead. Don't stop.
I'm not. I'm on a roll. Mm-hmm. We've made this a Class A misdemeanor. We thought it was more consistent. The line of thinking was that the seller to a person, especially in light of some of these relatively arguably marginal reasons for disqualification, that a seller was no more culpable, certainly, than the person who illegally possesses. And illegal possession, as you'll see, was a Class A misdemeanor and still is. we get to section four, and to make it clear for the committee, in the bill as it came to us, section four represents a major, if not the most major, policy decision in the bill. And that's extending the crime of ex-con and possession of a concealable firearm to all firearms. This is going to bring in arguably a tremendous number of people under that statute. Now, we haven't, our working group that met the last couple days here hasn't done anything with that, but the committee needs to be aware that is a major change.
Which one?
This is the change that, I'm sorry, top of page 16, we're on section four.
Yeah, we're working on your bill, Jim.
Page 16, section four of the bill, Senator. I was pointing out that this is one of the most major policy changes, and that's the extension of the ex-con possession firearm statute to all firearms rather than just handguns. So it would include rifles and shotguns and for anyone convicted of a felony. Again, working on the draft down on page 16.
Chuck, let me ask. So that means that, am I understanding this correctly, a kid who may have, when 18, been joyriding and pled out to a C felony, that person is under disability for how long? Forever?
Forever unless certain conditions are met, and in some cases the disability expires after 15 years.
One of the conditions to be can be met is to appeal to under Section 11 for relief.
And but you have to go to court to do that.
Yeah. There are relief provisions, but I didn't interpret the question that way. If you don't take advantage of the relief provisions or can't, you are disqualified forever, except in certain circumstances it would be 15 years.
Senator Brockman.
I understand what this is trying to do, but let me just pardon my lack of legal knowledge here, but we've scratched ex-convict and made it a felon.
Yeah.
Is one who has served his or her sentence or been paroled and met the terms of parole still a felon?
Yes. I don't think there's any legal effect to the change of those terms. Felon is simply a cleaner way of saying ex-convict.
So this is forever then. I mean, anyone who's...
The general rule with exceptions is, well, 15 years or...
And that's the law as it stands
forever.
Now. I mean,
that's the law as it stands now with respect to the length of time. Again, the major policy point here is the extension to other than handguns or other than concealable firearms. So we bring in the classes of shotguns and hunting rifles. And
I don't know. And again, pardon my lack of knowledge on this, but a convict does the time and has been paroled and met all the stuff of the sentence, okay? And he is or she is still a felon.
Yes.
Under existing statute and case law and all that stuff. Okay.
Once a felon, always a felon, unless you get an expungement. Is that it, Jack? Once a felon, always a felon, unless you get an expungement.
No, there is a further complication that's down at the bottom of the page, and that's going to take a lot of explaining, so if you'll bear with me,
okay,
we'll get to that.
Perhaps, Madam Chair, since there's concern on this point, we should mention that the avenue for relief from that under Section 11, I'm not suggesting you turn to it, but this is an abbreviated proceeding. I think the maximum time it's supposed to take is 15 days from application. And the grounds for being relieved of the bar of possession is to demonstrate by clear and convincing evidence that the petitioner does not pose a threat to the safety of the public or of the petitioner.
Prove a negative.
Well, yes.
Okay.
That's it. So just bear that in mind. We can argue about whether it's appropriate later, but that is the avenue for relief from being felon in possession.
Madam Chair.
So, Jack, even now for an ex, on the colonel, ex-convict in possession of, that is something that lasts forever. Was just talking about handguns. Is that the current law or?
No.
I suppose in most instances it would last 15 years longer, assuming there's no further convictions and assuming that the original crime didn't involve the use of a firearm or a switchblade knife. Okay, for instance, if you have a person who's convicted of burglary, if they have no further convictions, there weren't any weapons involved in the burglary, it would be all right after 15 years.
And you couldn't possess any type of firearm?
Again, the major difference here is you're only prohibited under state law from possessing concealable firearms. The major change here is not the class of persons, but the extension of the class of weapons.
Okay.
Now the crime of ex-con in possession or ex-felon in possession is not modified by concealable. It will be any firearm.
Now, meaning now under this new statute
under this new statute. Under current law, it's only concealable firearms.
And now you are prohibiting them to have a hunting rifle?
Yes.
According to this law?
Yes.
If you pass it, you are prohibiting them from having the hunting rifle. Current law, you're prohibited from concealable weapon for 15 years. Federal is, but state law is different. We're talking about state law, though. Okay.
I'm going to restrict my remarks to state law unless the committee has some other interest in federal law. Because what we're talking about here, I think the committee needs to keep in mind, is not only who can and cannot possess firearms, which is the sort of one half of the thing, but who's going to be punished criminally under state law and who's not. So there's two parts to the question as far as making policy choices. Okay, we get down to the language.
I just want to clarify for the people in the audience. What we're talking about here is punishing people under state law. Even, you know, and not often do we punish people under state law under the federal regulations, so that's what we're sort of sorting out here, is how you bring the punishments into what you see how we're out of step. Okay.
Okay. We get down to the language down on lines 23 through about 27. Present law. Without the bill. Under present law, there are two ways that a felony conviction can become a misdemeanor. Under present law, if it becomes a misdemeanor, you're okay as far as guns. One is if the felony becomes a misdemeanor by operation of law, by the type of sentence imposed. For instance, there are a number of ways.
You're paying attention to this, are you listening? Why don't you get up here and join us if you want? Just pull up a chair so you can.
I mostly just came over to see if you had any questions or if I could.
Oh, I guess we want you to listen.
I'm just here to grovel.
Absorb what's going on here and.
That's fine.
Listen. Okay.
Two ways a felony can become a misdemeanor, in which case you're okay for the gun laws. One is by operation of law by the type of sentence imposed. There's a number of ways that can happen. I'll give you a couple examples. One is instead of being sentenced to the penitentiary, you get a year in the county jail. At the end of that year, at the time of sentencing, that is considered a misdemeanor by operation of law, regardless of whether the judge brings up the subject or not. Another example, you get sentenced to probation, and you successfully complete your probation. At the end of that probation, when you've successfully completed it, that's technically considered a misdemeanor, right? That's the first way, by operation of law, by the type of sentence. Second way, it's a felony conviction, say, and this only applies to C felonies, and the judge says at the time of sentencing, all right, you've been convicted of, for instance, car theft, but I think there are special circumstances here, I'm declaring it a misdemeanor. That's present law. In both of those instances, you'd be okay for the gun laws.
Current law in the state of Oregon.
Current law in the state of Oregon.
Okay.
What the bill, as it came to us, did would abolish things becoming misdemeanors by operation of law, and arguably, it's unclear, abolish the judge's ability to, well, the effect on the firearms law when the judge declares it a misdemeanor. What we've done with the changes from yesterday and today, we've made it so if a sentence becomes a misdemeanor by operation of law, you're still in trouble for the gun laws. But we've made it clear, and you'll see the new language on lines 25 and 26, that if the court feels that special circumstances exist that justify declaring a misdemeanor, you're in good shape for the gun law. Did everybody follow that?
I sure did.
Okay.
Jack,
Senator
Hill. Why is that?
We felt that when a felony becomes a misdemeanor by operation of law, that it doesn't justify getting the person back in good shape for the guns law. But if a judge feels that circumstances are such that it should be a misdemeanor from Jump Street, then you should be okay for the gun laws. Okay. So we basically took the middle ground with the changes that we've made, as opposed to bringing everybody into the ex-con and possession statute as the bill did. Second policy issue that you need to be aware of is the language on line 27. Currently, if you're convicted of the crime of possession of marijuana, the only crime of possession of marijuana is when it's over an ounce, and that's a B felony. It's the only B felony that's capable of misdemeanor treatment. If you're convicted of that particular B felony, you're still exempted from the problem with the ex-con in possession statute. That's current Oregon law. The bill deletes that exemption. So now you would be brought into the purview of the ex-con in possession statute in two cases. If you've been convicted of over an ounce of marijuana since 1973, or prior to 1973, you were convicted of marijuana regardless of the amount, because it was a felony then, regardless. So you can have somebody, two cases again, someone who's been convicted of over an ounce, someone who prior to 1973 has been convicted of any amount. Example, 1970, a person is convicted and has less than an ounce. He's still liable to the ex-con and possession laws under the bill, and we did not change that. That's a policy choice that you simply need to be aware of.
No, wait, we did change it. At least as it came out, right? We have that as an exemption. I was unclear as I reviewed this what our final decision was on that. We were back and forth and back and forth. But it's a committee decision in any event. Do we want to, a person has been convicted of possession of marijuana, a B felony, should that person be not permitted to have a firearm?
Especially in 1973.
Now let's just take it back to 73. We can deal with the pre-73. That is a less than an ounce problem. Later, it presents some different problems. But first problem is B felony, possession more than an ounce of marijuana, not commuted to misdemeanor. Should it or should it not bar you from
subject you to the ex-con or ex-felon in possession statute. Keeping in mind that that particular B felony is the only B felony that can be reduced to a misdemeanor. So in a sense, it's given special treatment under the law now.
Madam Chair?
Yeah, please.
Would simply also point out that because of that felony can be reduced to a misdemeanor, it can also be expunged for whatever that's worth, because only A felonies and misdemeanors can be expunged.
Yes.
I'm sorry. C felonies and misdemeanors can be expunged only. A and B felonies cannot normally be expunged with the exception of the marijuana sandwich.
And I believe that in addition to it being the only B felony that can be treated as a misdemeanor, Representative Clark, I think it is also the only B felony that can be expunged, if I'm not mistaken.
Even if it's not reduced for misdemeanor?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know
so that. It's given special treatment under existing law in two ways.
So it's really a C felony in every respect except that
the potential penalty, that's correct.
Madam Chair, could I make one other comment about this without, I personally have no opinion of the policy on this, the one comment I would make is it seems, if I understand the way the federal laws work, if you have been convicted of a felony, under federal law, you can't buy, a federally licensed dealer cannot sell a gun to you. So the fact that state law, I may be way off base on this, but the fact that state law would exempt that, certainly we have the authority to do that, as a practical matter, whether that would be meaningless or not.
Well, that
I think there's
we're
a question
talking about punishment here, though.
I understand that, but if
Jack,
you've been...
That brings us back to what you have to look at a lot of the provisions in this bill in two respects, and the Chair just pointed that out. It would be meaningless, as Representative Clark pointed out, as far as the person's ability to own the firearm, but it is certainly meaningful to bring him into the potential punishment under state law.
That's where we get in trouble with unknowing individuals, if you will, who are all of a sudden Class A misdemeanor eligible.
Right. It is a different issue when it is a question of being a felon in possession of a firearm from the outright question of whether state law is going to prohibit someone who's been convicted of possession of marijuana from purchasing a firearm. Because as a practical matter, if I've been convicted of a felony, a federally licensed gun dealer shouldn't be selling a gun to me anyway. That's a separate issue from whether I'm going to be declared to be a felon in possession.
And a misdemeanor. I think that's mostly what this committee's that's a, at least I sense that's what one of the issues that the committee's concerned about is
sure.
Bootstrapping, if you will, people who
Madam Chair, Representative Clark or counsel can tell me, under federal law, is there the distinction drawn between a concealable weapon and any type of firearm for these purposes?
No, there's not.
And that federal law is any felon, anyone convicted under?
But it's not a crime, it's just you can't own a gun, and then what's the enforcement on it? There probably isn't any. Is there? Does anybody know what the enforcement is on it? Under the federal law.
I believe it's up to 10 years and $10,000. They exempt antique
firearms. Madam Chair?
And yes.
This is a felony. It's if you have been
convicted. We need to have you on the right. We need to have your name.
Madam Chair, John Nichols, Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. Under federal law, one doesn't even have to have been convicted of a felony. It's if you have been convicted of a crime for which the judge could have sentenced you to more than 1 year in the penitentiary.
Madam Chair, that by definition in the state of Oregon is a felony.
That is a felony. So you would have had to commit a felony
presumably, yes.
By definition, state law. Well, not presumably, but actually.
Okay, I agree.
And if you're
Go ahead, Mr.
And if you're convicted for a felony under federal law, you're barred forever from owning a weapon?
Unless you receive an expungement, I believe a presidential pardon or appeal to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms for a relief from disabilities. In which case, if you get a relief from disabilities, you have to furnish a copy of that letter to the gun dealer, and he attaches it to the back of the federal registration form.
Okay, so just to recap, getting back to it, the main policy decision here is whether you want to include the crime of possession of marijuana. A sub-issue of that, let's assume that, for the purposes of argument, that you do make a decision that you want to include marijuana as subjecting someone to the ex-con and possession laws. There's a sub-issue, and that is whether you want to include the pre-1973 folks who got felony treatment regardless of the amount, including those folks who under present law would only be subject to a violation. So I just toss that out. The next change that we've made,
it's even if you do have a violent felony, I believe you can still have under Oregon law a gun.
I've got no problem with a violent felony.
But then, well, what the approach was, how do you address that problem? We obviously don't want persons who are committed of violent felonies having any kind of firearm. But, and we came up with the solution. They're a felon, they go through an appeal process. Hey, it didn't have to do with firearms, didn't have to do with violence, okay. Relief from disability. That's the solution we came up with. Because it seems better than just anybody, regardless of the felony, has a long gun, which could include some assault weapons. And we're not glued to the specific language, but it does seem like something that should be addressed or a concern.
So what you're saying is that any other felon other than a violent one should go and show why they should be able to do that. And I guess the question I have is, well, I'm just going to argue both ways that this is there are some people who couldn't afford to get into court, who can't even get them into court to things like, well, get out of their violent marriage or whatever all of that is. I mean, I assume that's where the thought process came from. Well, let's set the misdemeanor side piece of things away and go on. We're never going to get through here, and I don't want to go much. I know Dick wants to go, and I want to give you the promise that you can go if you want to, Dick.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your willingness to even be here at all.
Thank you.
And I would like to have us decide what we're going to do by 9 o'clock and at least some go through whatever and flag the unresolved and see if we can.
We probably ought to keep plowing along then because we've got other things in here we haven't dealt with yet.
Yeah. So we have, I will flag some of the major decision points that people want to talk about. Certainly the misdemeanors in and out. We have agreement that if we're going to have misdemeanors in at all, we're going to deal with Jack's list. It's okay, Jack. Go ahead, please.
I forgot where we were.
Well, we're
at section 8.
We were at the top of section of 18.
Okay.
Really finishing up on 5.
That was we cleared up the non-disclosure language.
Okay.
In section 5. Really talking. Okay, there's another place we'd... All right, we're down to Section 8, which is the issuance provisions for concealed handgun permit. On this, we initially
again, in keeping with the rest of the bill, got rid of the distinction between violent and got rid of nonviolent misdemeanors. The net effect of what we did in this is expand the category of persons who cannot, are not eligible to be issued concealed handguns licenses.
We left in the language, for instance, about being free on any form of pretrial release or having an outstanding warrant. So if you're in either of those situations, you can't have a handgun license issued. Now, committee, to understand the significance of leaving that in, needs to contrast it with the other provisions where we took it out. The reason we left it in here is because while there is a right, at least our feeling was, while there is a constitutional right to bear arms, there is no constitutional right to bear concealed arms. That is ordinarily construed as a privilege. We also felt that it was appropriate to have this category of persons be fairly expansive, because these people aren't going to be subject to criminal penalties without having notice first. You're going to have two situations. Either they're going to be laboring under one of these disabilities, and they're going to go and get a concealed weapons permit, and they're going to find out they can't get one. Or you're going to have, they're going to be in possession of a concealed weapons permit, one of the disabilities is going to attach, and that permit will be revoked. So in either case, they have notice that they can't have a concealed weapon, and they'll necessarily have to get that notice before they're ever subject to any criminal liability. So in contrast to what we did in some other categories, here we broaden the classes of people that are laboring under the disability. And again, this is for simply issuance of a concealed weapons permit. Okay. On the following page, we again deleted the violence. Well, we deleted not the violent misdemeanor, but just the adjective violent. So if you have been convicted of a misdemeanor, of any misdemeanor, within prior 4 years, you're not eligible to get that permit issued again. Lines 18, we changed 4 to 6 years, that's the time.
Excuse me, Jack, any misdemeanor?
Yes.
Or concealed.
If you've been convicted within 4 years of any misdemeanor, you're not eligible to have a concealed weapons permit given to you.
So shoplifting?
Unless
the court relieved you of that.
And again, that's to be consistent with the legal line of thought that while you have a right to bear arms, you don't have a right to a concealed arm. That is a privilege.
We took out involving violence because since we'd taken misdemeanor involving violence out as a category that would disqualify you for various things, we didn't want to have to deal with distinguishing that from other misdemeanors.
That's almost got to be in there to have any credence to this thing at all, I would think, Senator.
The violence part?
Yeah.
Well, we can debate that and take it out entirely if you want to. But, I mean, that's why we cut the violence out, because to define that, we would have had to get into this whole business of dealing with specific misdemeanors now for the sole purpose of a concealed weapon permit. And we thought that's perhaps overkill.
Don't look at me. I have a motion ready.
No, we can't say it.
Well, now do remember, this is just a draft. There's nothing more than that. Just some thoughts that
we are working into the night on this thing.
Okay.
Well, see, I guess I sort of look at it, and I guess if I'm carrying a concealed weapon is different. I acknowledge that, but I guess this is where, to me, where the violent
or you make the distinction. I don't want the misdemeanors in it at all. I would say for carrying a concealed weapon, I would look at the violent felonies. I mean, at this one, even resisting arrest, having that in here, but I mean, some kind of violence. Because I think that most people, anyway, carry a concealed weapon. Well, I shouldn't, that's a generalization, maybe I'm right. I think most people don't carry a concealed weapon. I think most of the people who do, because they're in some kind of danger, some kind of extreme situation, they say that, well, you can't do it because you've committed any misdemeanor, shoplifting or something. I just have trouble with it, but I'm not going to.
Well, again, Senator, that was the change that we chose to make. Keep in mind that this does nothing to keep a person from having a firearm,
okay. Even
a concealable firearm. They simply don't get a permit to carry it concealed.
Okay,
I just want to make sure that's understood.
Yeah.
All right. Down on line 19, I received a phone call from the NRA person in Washington, D.C., and he pointed out some what I think are purely technical changes, and this is the first one of the first of those. You can't get a permit if you've been found to be mentally ill and subject to an order that you're prohibited, and this is under the new language. He wanted to have the language inserted so it would read, has not been found to be mentally ill and at the time of the application subject to an order. And so that would clarify that if you were subject to one of these orders 10 years ago and it's long since been lifted, it doesn't make any difference. Right, you have to be subject to the order when you go to apply for it to be disqualified.
So that's a requested NRA amendment.
Right. Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Okay. Another NRA request is on line 22. Instead of being disqualified because you've been listed on the Health Division Registry, he wants to change the has to is so it would read that you're disqualified.
Let's make it
hard
again.
Right. Yeah.
Is not.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay.
Page 20. You'll see a statutory.
This I have them.
Okay. I missed that one, but I'll catch it later. Don't worry about it.
Well, let me read that language so it's in context, then it will make sense.
Where are you talking about?
I'll tie in the is not business. So that way it would read that the sheriff shall issue the person a concealed handgun license if the person... Oh, I see what the problem is. It should read is not listed.
Mm-hmm.
Strike the then. So the sheriff shall issue a concealed weapon permit if the person is not listed on the Health Division Registry, putting it into present tense.
Okay.
Next change is the statutory form here, the application for a license to carry a handgun. We've deleted some language there to make it consistent with the criteria for disqualification that we've just finished talking about.
So you did the same thing, yeah?
Yes, okay. We made it consistent. On page 21 at the bottom, we also made a change to the form. There's a bunch of requirements in here that to get a handgun permit, you have to demonstrate competence with a handgun. We put a space for that on the form. So simply to make it consistent with the statutory requirements. Next change is in section 9A. In sub 2, we've added language, this is page 24, line 1, to clarify the standard when the sheriff is able to deny the permit. We added language, if the sheriff has reasonable grounds to believe. I don't think that's a substantive change. It simply clarifies what the standard is. Section 10, this is a substantive change, although albeit a small one. Section 3, line 19. That sentence read, again on line 19, a police officer may revoke a license. We changed that to sheriff. In the statutory scheme of things, the sheriff is the issuing authority. It seemed to make sense that the issuing authority should be the authority that revokes as well. Again, the issuing authority is the sheriff of the county where the person resides. Here, the issuing authority, in a sense, is the same, although it would be any sheriff since these permits are did statewide, rather than any police officer on the street.
Jack?
Yes, sir.
Let me ask, when your license is suspended, or your privileges to drive are suspended, there's generally a requirement that the court or the officer take the license, the card, the indicia. Is there any sense to, as quote, in addition to the revocation, requiring the surrender of the card?
Senator, that's a good point. I don't believe there is. I don't believe that exists in the bill unless I missed it.
But it doesn't.
I think, do you have a hand and growth copy, Jack? Or are you pretty
yes.
much working from?
I've got both.
I'm just wondering if it would be useful for some members of the committee to obtain a hand and growth copy, perhaps not now, but as we break up or something, as a quicker way of reviewing the changes.
The one
sure.
that was delivered to our office was the one that showed the changes that you made, the deletions that you made and changes that you made. That one was...
The hand and gross version?
Yeah.
Did we give you one of those? Okay.
Well, that's what you delivered to my office.
Now,
not hand and gross now. It was...
Maybe an LC draft form?
Yeah, that's what came.
I don't think anything but this prepared.
Yeah,
this
is earlier. I got it. Yeah, I just got the draft. Okay, all right, thank you.
Well, you're the vice chair. You probably got more stuff.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Senator, I'm sorry, I don't...
No, that's all right. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
All right.
Your objection.
Anyway, that change is a relatively simple one from police officer to sheriff. Section 11. In section 11, we've made some relatively minor changes to make sure they track with the statute. For instance, there is language that says it may petition the district court to review denial, refusal, or a denial or refusal. We also included non-renewal and revocation. We made a requirement that the language in the bill was the judge shall then make findings and issue a judgment. We made it findings and conclusions to track with the usual legal language of findings of fact and conclusions of law. There was a portion where it says the judge shall issue a formal judgment. Since all of us could only think of one kind of judgment that exists, we deleted formal. A judgment's a judgment is a judgment.
Jack, let me raise a question that occurred to me as I read this over today. Since this is not a trial, and this is not a conviction, is judgment the right word, or should we be talking about an order?
I think it should be judgment, Senator, because these things are appealable. They're appealable de novo to the next highest court, whatever it is, and then they're also appealable to the Court of Appeals, and I believe the Court of Appeals requires a judgment.
Final order isn't enough.
I think the changes that we made this session require a judgment, although I'm not sure.
No, I'll accept your.
Jack, let me ask, what record, if any, has been made as far as these steps you go through, justice to Muni Court to, I guess, other court, and as far as what's reasonably accessible?
What record has been made?
Well, I mean, see, I don't want to see a situation where we've got a municipal court and the judge is just a rollover. And that judge has a reputation in that county. You know, we've got counties that got that have district courts, justice courts, mm-hmm. municipal, but Lane County's got all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me you can pick your forum here pretty easily.
I think the way
no judge shopping, the way this is structured.
The way I read it, Senator, is that you're required to go. Oh, I understand your question. The interpretation of reasonably accessible.
Yeah. I mean, Lane County's got a justice court, I think, in Florence. They've got a justice court in Oakland. Yeah. They've got a municipal court in Lane in Eugene. They've got a district court in Lane County. Yeah. If you live in Veneta, I guess you get to choose and go judge shopping.
There's a justice court in Veneta?
No, I mean, Veneta is about halfway, or Crow or Noti. I mean, you can drive down to Florence if you think the justice court down there is going to be a rollover.
There might be some element of that, Senator. But there are restrictions that, for instance, the city, the municipal court, you can only go there if you live in the city. Or district court.
Okay.
That's a problem that we missed, Senator. Several. Probably are several.
Okay.
Okay, can we speed along here, folks?
Yes.
Okay, we basically cleaned up language in section 11. Section 13, again, we've deleted the language misdemeanor involving violence. Okay, all right, section 13 is a key section. This is the statute that prohibits simple possession of firearm.
You want to say something? Okay.
Well, on page 25, line 22, that's generally subsection 6. You know, on line 22, it says, in the following situations.
Yeah, no, there I got that. We have to take that out. There were following situations. Right. And we've
now there's only one situation, so we don't need it.
We just didn't catch that.
Whatever the hour was.
All right. Again, section 13 is probably the one of the key provisions. It contains the prohibition and penalties for simple possession. Here we deleted misdemeanors, so you don't get disqualified from firearms right for a misdemeanor and then get subject to penalties. We also deleted the language about outstanding warrants and pretrial release. So the net effect of that is, if you're on pretrial release or if you're if you have an outstanding warrant, you don't lose your firearm rights. That was the one section that I feel fairly comfortable in saying something that I don't think the committee has heard me say too often. Then that is, it's my opinion, it's blatantly unconstitutional because you're basically punishing people because they're accused of a crime. And I don't think you can get away with that under the Oregon Constitution, whether you can under the federal or not. We also deleted language having to do with been convicted of a crime, the element of which is the use of controlled substances. Again, these folks are covered by the prohibitions against felons. That covers probably 95% of the drugs you're talking about. And we also excluded the language about having been diverted or convicted twice for crimes involving the use of alcohol. The feedback that I got, that I think that we received from the committee at our previous hearing, was that folks were somewhat hard-pressed to see the connection between that and losing your rights to have
firearms and being subject to penalties for possession. That brings us to...
Just on the record, Madam Chair, that's one of the few portions of the bill that I thought had real merit.
That's why we have resisted a broad working group to put this together. You're in the minority once again.
Yeah. I think every lawyer will tell you, Senator, that legislative intent is hard to divine sometimes.
I just figure an individual with a couple of Deweys in 4 years and 90-some-odd percent of the homicides and
it's like
domestic,
military intelligence.
I think that might be a guy who wanted to keep a gun out of his hands.
But we're going to get him on the other felony pieces.
Well, also on that traffic ticket and littering and some of those other matters in there.
For the any misdemeanor?
Would you like me to go home now?
No! Not at all. I finally got your attention.
Hey, I've read this thing.
But, Senator, I think I need to point out that any misdemeanor language doesn't subject you to criminal penalties. It simply prevents the sheriff from giving you a concealed weapons permit.
Yep.
So.
Gotcha.
Section 13A, we deleted some redundant language. The way the statute, this is a new statute, the way it was written now, it says commit the crime, blah, 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 if the person knowingly possesses or has in possession any machine gun, short-barreled rifle, etc. That seemed like saying the same thing twice. We deleted or has in possession. Section 15, this is the language I thought was problematic. It said the person commits the crime of unlawfully attempting to purchase a firearm and makes it a Class C felony. And that, the problem with that is, what if the person actually is successful in purchasing it? Then possession would seem to say that it's only an A misdemeanor, which seems like somewhat of an anomaly. We clean that up. You'll see in the draft, person commits the crime of unlawfully purchasing a firearm if the person, knowing that the person is prohibited by the state or federal law, again, we've added a knowing element from owning or possessing a firearm or having the firearm under the person's custody or control, purchases or attempts to purchase. So we just cleaned up the language. We haven't restricted it at all. Because this is seems to be virtually the same as possession, we made it an A misdemeanor.
On line 14, we should say unlawfully purchasing a firearm is a Class A misdemeanor. Get the attempting out of there. I think that was.
It should be purchasing or attempting to purchase.
Except we've defined attempting as purchasing in defining the
right.
Crime.
You're right.
Crime
one. Right. Unlawfully purchasing. Okay, Section 16. Section 16, again, we've done some cleanup work. Sub 2 was one of the more interesting paragraphs that I've seen in some time. We've cleaned it up so it simply says what we believe it was intended to say in about 20% of the space. It reads, the duplicate sheet of the register shall on the day of purchase or trade be hand delivered or mailed to the local law enforcement agency. And what this section deals with are reporting requirements for persons engaged in firearms business. Because this is basically a somewhat technical reporting requirement, keeping in mind that these are businesses that are licensed under federal law and therefore presumptively legitimate businesses, because these are technical reporting requirements, we reduced it from an A misdemeanor to a C misdemeanor, because basically it's, as I said, simply a paperwork crime. Section 17 has to do with people who intend to commit felonies and transferring and that type of thing. Again, we've, to make it consistent, we've inserted clarified the knowledge requirement so it reads, any person who with intent to commit a felony, strike the or on line 29.
who knows or reasonably should know that a felony will be committed. Cleaned up that element, the knowledge element. Do you see the or I'm talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah.
I don't, where, line 29?
29.
Yeah. I think that's right. So, a person who would intend to commit a felony or who knows or reasonably should know that a felony will be committed. I think it's proper.
I must say. Okay.
We do our work carefully here, Corey. Figure out whether there's an or, make sure the or is not here, or our is here. Okay.
Section 18, Section 18 is the mandatory gun minimum. We, in keeping with the request from the committee, restored the language that provides a way for judges to give first-time offenders a break, basically. As present law says that you're subject to a mandatory minimum of 5 years, unless the court feels that that's inappropriate.
We just restored sub 5, is that all you did?
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, and we didn't we didn't touch any of sub A in that.
We had to restore some other language just to make it consistent, Senator. For instance, on line 10, where it says except is provided in sub 5.
Okay, but I'm talking about any policy changes. There are no policy changes.
Other than the one.
Just that one.
Okay.
Okay. Section. Section 21. Has to do with prohibitions against carrying concealed knives. In the draft on line 18, I think there's a mistaken reference. ORS 166.260 is deleted. I think that's a mistake. That should be restored.
You're going to delete 290?
290 should be deleted because that statute is repealed.
Okay.
260 is the exceptions to the prohibitions, so that police officers can carry slug shots and billy clubs and that kind of thing.
We made no changes from the B and Gross version.
Well, but that's what you said.
No, Senator, we should have, huh?
You're right, that's just a mistake that was pointed out to me by...
today, since we met. Okay.
So that should...
Which comes out?
The reference to ORS 166.260. Otherwise, you'd prohibit police officers from carrying slug shots, whatever those are, something like a billy club.
Is that